to the year. So many of you have been so kind to me and my family over the years, and it's just a great blessing for me to be here tonight. And one thing I especially like is, well, first I was forced to sit by Curtis, but we won't talk about that. But the young people that are here, I love, and had made comment to my family the last time we were here how much I love the singing here, because we hear the children's voices. And you children, you keep singing out. Sing out with all your heart. It's wonderful. It's a great thing. Speaking of children, I came across some advice from kids. You adults listen to your kids, right? Listen to their advice. Well, they have advice too. And I wanted to share these with you. I thought they were kind of neat. The first one was, never trust a dog to watch your food. And that is good advice. Number two, when your dad is mad and he asks you, do I look stupid? Do not answer. And then number three, never tell your mom that her diet is not working. These are true. These came from kids. They came up with these. Number four, when mom is upset with dad, don't let her comb your hair. That's probably good. Number five, never hold a dustbuster and a cat at the same time. Number six, you cannot hide a piece of broccoli in your milk. And number seven, I thought was good. If you want a kitten, start out by asking for a horse. That's pretty good. And then number eight, don't pick on your sister when she's holding a baseball bat. It's good, right? And then number nine, when you get a bad grade in school, show it to your mom when she's on the phone. And then my favorite one is number 10, and my purpose isn't to bring humor and make we laugh, but I think it is comical, but number 10 is never baptize a cat. And I agree with that one there. That's very true. But the one I wanted to pick out and talk about that goes along with our lesson tonight is number 8. Don't pick on your sister when she's holding a baseball bat. That's probably very good advice. And if we had to categorize this, I think it would fall under getting along with each other. That's the category it would fall under. And that's pretty much, I think, about what life is about. Because life is about relationships. It's at home, at school, at work, wherever we have to engage with people. It's about relationships and getting along. And we're asking, well, did Jesus ever talk about that, about getting along? He gave a commandment on it. He most certainly did. In John chapter 14, or chapter 13 rather, while he was speaking to his disciples, he says, I'm going to give you a new commandment. And that's exactly what he does. Here in John chapter 14 or 13. And this is at the time while he's speaking to his disciples this night in the upper room, Judas is going to betray him. So after Judas leaves the room, Jesus speaks to the 11 and he tells them this. He says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. And by this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. You think about Jesus and him, his association with his disciples. For the last 3 years, he has been with them. They lived together. They traveled together. A lot of it, what they had to do, and no doubt his teaching was about getting along. These men had to get along with each other, beside the very fact of learning about Christ's kingdom and all this teaching that's going along. In fact, you remember there was a couple of times where they were arguing with each other and he told them, you need to stop, you need to get along. But he's telling them this new commandment. And what's new about it is that you love one another because I loved you. So that's why you're going to love other people. And that's the new commandment to them. What he was teaching his disciples had to impact the world. He's going to leave, and he's going to leave those 11, and it's going to be 12 again. And they've got to teach the world, get the message out to the world. How do you do that? What would be the thing that would impact the world? Would it be these 12 men's speaking ability? Go, wow, they're such great speakers. I don't think that's what it is. Would it be the fact that they can produce all of these miracles? Well, that's going to be part of it for sure. That's going to be impressive. But what is it that's going to impact the world? That is when these guys leave and people are going to say, wow, there's something to this Jesus. Jesus says, they're going to be known, you're going to be known as my disciples because you show love to one another. And that commandment, every one of us can do. We can do that. He says, we're going to know you by this commandment. He laid this foundation for this formation of this group that was going to be very unique in human history. He's going to create a group that was identified by one thing, love for each other. That's how you knew who the followers of Christ were. Other groups would identify themselves by their skin color, right? We have that today. Others would be identified by the uniforms they wore. When you see this group of people, you know who they are by their skin color, by their uniform, by their creeds that they operate by all these different things. And Jesus is unique in the history of the world that Christians are going to be known by what? Their love for one another. It's about getting along. And we can all do it. But he says, this is what's going to impact the world. He gives this commandment, and if you really think about it, it's the last commandment he gives. Of great importance. That's what he does before he's crucified. It's a big deal, this idea of getting along. And so that's what I want to talk to you about, this concept, and just briefly tonight, the concept of getting along. My goal is to encourage everyone here tonight to treat people better. And this real simple concept, but I didn't come up with it. Jesus did. Treat people better, and people will know you're followers of Christ. And so what I've come up with is 7 important principles to remember about how to treat people. So here's the very first principle. Number one, instead of judging people by their past, stand by them and help them build their future. Every person has a past. With some people, it's a thing of pride. Let me tell you about my past. And other people, it's like, no, we're not going to go there. We're not going to talk about my past. But everybody has something in their past. And whatever their past is, people we need to know can change and do change, and they grow. And for us to be judging people by their past is wrong. A lot of what I'm going to say tonight is very forthright, if I can say it that way, maybe blunt, but I want us to be very clear what is right and what is wrong. And instead of judging people by their past, which is wrong, we need to be building them up. And the good example for that in Scripture is Saul. Early on in the book of Acts, remember, he was breathing murderous threats to the Lord's disciples. He's in Jerusalem where he has been hunting down these converts to Christianity, and he's been putting them in jail. And now he's going to head to Damascus to do the same thing. He's on this crusade to attack Christians. And as he's nearing the city, there on the road, suddenly a light flashes all around him. He falls to the ground and he hears this voice. In Acts chapter 9, verses 1 through 6. Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? Saul asked. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting, he replied. Now get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. From that time on, Saul's life is forever changed. He becomes a follower too of Christ. His heart changes, his allegiance changes, even his name changes because he encountered Jesus. And you think about it now, Barnabas, he gets hooked up with this really nice guy. It takes a lot of great convincing on Barnabas's part, especially to the Christians probably there in Jerusalem. It's like, hey, this Saul, he's a good guy. And they're all going, no. We know Saul. We've heard of Saul. Everybody's heard of Saul. We know what this guy has done. We know about his past. And Barnabas had to argue with these guys and say, that's not the same guy. He used to do those things. He was guilty, yes. He did all those horrible things, but that's not him now. And brothers and sisters, that's how we need to be looking at other brothers and sisters who sit in the pews next to us. Perhaps they were homosexuals. Perhaps they're tatted from head to toe. Perhaps they're still dealing with alcoholism, but they're your brother and your sister, and that was their past. You leave it in the past, and you treat them, you lift them up, you treat them better, because they have a heart just like you do. They have a soul just like you do. It's a lesson for all of us adults, even for little kids. You know, treat people better. We need to be doing that. We all have imperfect pasts, and that's what the first thing we need to remember. And the second thing is that we need to be reminded is that we don't know the person's current situation. We don't know what's going on in their hearts and in their homes and what has happened to them. Maybe they come in a little grumpy. Well, that's going to happen. Everybody have a perfect day? How about today? Everybody feeling chipper and have just a perfect day today? I promise you, not everybody in here did. But we don't know what everybody's gone through. So let's just remember this simple, simple lesson. Instead of judging people by their past, we need to stand by them and help them with their future. We want to treat them better for their future. So number one, treat people better. And then number two, listen with curiosity. Speak with candor and act with integrity. There's three things here. And the first one is listening with curiosity. And this is really where I think friendships thrive, where they grow. It's an approach to each conversation where you're asking instead of giving. When somebody comes up and speaks to you and wants to know about you and talks about you and then you leave and you go, wow, I really like that person. Why do you say that? Because they talked about you. We all love that. When somebody's interested in me and they ask about me and how I'm doing, we love that, right? We all do. Is that what you practice? And in order to do that, what makes that so special is that we listen intently. We look them directly in the eyes and we act, at least act like, yeah, I'm interested. I want to know. Listening is such a big part of treating people better. We listen with curiosity and we speak with candor. That is forthright honesty. It's essential for building and maintaining healthy relationships. The Apostle Paul just simply put in Ephesians 4 and verse 15, speaking the truth with love, we will grow up in every way into Christ, who is the head. Speak the truth in love, speaking with candor. Candor is the art of speaking with sincerity and openness. It helps us to understand each other. But often candor gets twisted into brutal honesty that causes people to have hurt feelings. We can be too honest with people. And, oh, dear sister, you're here. You should have looked in the mirror before you came. No, that's not candor. That's just being brutal. But people want the truth. And you know who want the truth probably more than anybody, I believe, are teenagers. I believe teenagers do. They can look through people. They see when an adult is not telling the truth. They want the truth. Tell me like it is. And we all like that. But the Apostle Paul says we are to do that, but you do it in love. It makes a difference. And then act with integrity. That means telling the truth even when it hurts. That means keeping a promise when you would rather not. That means that you can confront problems when it's easier to walk away. That means forgiving when you'd rather just hold the grudge. You do it with integrity. So when a person listens with curiosity and they speak with candor and they act with integrity, they will make great strides in certainly treating people better. And then number three, don't try to make yourself great by making someone else look small. This is old, isn't it? I remember learning this when I was a child. I wrote it in my early Bibles of years ago. But it's something that I found even now that I'm an older man. We still want to do this. Lift people. We want to lift ourselves up by putting others down. But I think people do this for various reasons. They do it perhaps to make themselves feel better. Perhaps because they're jealous. Or they want to make themselves feel important. Or maybe they're thinking, this will make somebody like me if I put this person down. Or it's to get attention, or perhaps to feel in control. There's a lot of reasons why people do it. But you know what? No reason is good enough. No reason. It's unacceptable to make a mean comment and put other people down. Kids, I want that to be very clear. It is not allowable. It is wrong to talk bad about other people, to build yourself up. We are taking people's joy away from them. We are stealing when we do that. Our job, according to the Bible, is to offer help and support and love, and to do everything in our power not to hurt people and to not make them feel small, but to encourage them and to make them feel better. In Luke chapter 18, we're told of a story, and that's what I wanted to turn to. In Luke chapter 18, beginning in verse 10, probably familiar with all of us here, we have a story of two different men, actually a parable Jesus is telling here about two men who go to the temple to pray. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 18, I want to read this to you, beginning in verse 9. It says, he also told this parable to some who trusted in themselves that they were righteous and treated others with contempt. So those who needed this story, Jesus is saying, hey, you like to put people down by building yourself up. This is the story you need. He said, two men went up to the temple to pray, one a Pharisee and the other a tax collector. The Pharisee, standing by himself, prayed thus, God, I thank you that I am not like other men, extortioners, unjust, adulterers, or even like this tax collector. I fast twice a week, I give tithes of all I get. But the tax collector, standing far off, would not even lift up his eyes to heaven, but beat his breast, saying, God be merciful to me, the sinner. I tell you, this man went down to his house justified rather than the other. It was a good thing that the tax collector was standing far away, so he didn't have to hear those degrading words of the Pharisee. I'm so glad I'm not like him. Anybody ever say that to you? Oh, I'm glad I'm not like you. Isn't that horrible? But we may even think that. And God says, no. No, your job is to build people up. And to build people up, then you will be built up. If we want to treat people worse, we'll try to make ourselves look great by making others look small. But Jesus says, no. You lift other people up, even when you think they don't deserve it. And then number four, remember, everyone has a story. It may be something that they've gone through in their past, something that they're currently dealing with, and it may be a big deal that has forever changed them, or maybe it's just a small thing, but everybody has a past. Everybody has battles and issues that they have dealt with. Treating better people better means that we are going to withhold judgment instead of instead offer the consideration that you would like to receive. Everybody goes through something. One of my daughters has recently had something of a personality change. I have four daughters, and she has lost her inner motivation. She's not the same person that she used to be. She used to have great self-discipline. She would get up at 4 o'clock every morning and run several miles just on her own. She was very disciplined. She doesn't do that anymore. She has issues of going out of the house by herself now. She's not able to do some things with her regular friends that she used to. When she was invited to go see the fireworks at 4th of July, she declined. She would not do that. Instead, we, the family, were met upstairs in a closed room with the TV on loud, trying to deafen the sound of the fireworks that were going on outside. She had a real hard time, and does, with noises, loud noises. You see, 4 months ago, my daughter witnessed a double homicide. She saw two police officers shot and killed. That's not something anybody would want to see, but it changed her most drastically. People may wonder, well, why has she changed? And people don't know that. And I can say it because she's not here tonight. My family's not here, so I can talk about her. But people don't know this. We don't tell people this, but we have to wonder. People are wondering, why is she sitting with her mom now instead of with the rest of the young people? Why have these things changed? We don't know that. You don't know why somebody comes in the audience in the evening and they're kind of despondent or they're very quiet. You don't know what's going on in their life. And we don't. So the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 3 says, "Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourself. Let each of you not only look to his own interests, but the interests of others." Talk to the person, and don't judge the person, but talk to them, because remember, they have a story. When I'm in the grocery store and I'm in the express checkout line, that's what, 10 items or less, and the lady in front of me, she's got 20 items. What do? I tell myself, she's got a story. Who knows why she's there? She may not even realize she has more items. She may be hard-pressed. She may have a sick daughter at home she needs to get to. Her husband may be a crazy guy, and she's nervous. I don't know. But what I can extend is grace and mercy and love and patience to that person. We don't know their story, but we do know they do have a story. And this is going to help us to get along when we think about this. And then number 5, we don't meet people by accident. Everybody that comes into your life has a role, and they do play a role. You know, some people are bridges. They don't stay very long in your life, but they help you get to where you need to go. Where other people are roadblocks, they delay your life and keep you from going in a certain direction. Some people are in your life and they help you grow. Some people are going to hurt you. Some people will inspire you to do better. But everybody's there for a reason, and it happens. And I think of such a great example of one guy in the Bible in Acts chapter 18. His name is Aquila. Aquila. I haven't heard any guys named Aquila today, have you? Aquila. But anyway, he has a wife, and her name is Priscilla, and they were residents in Corinth. They had just come from Italy because the emperor Claudius had expelled all the Jews from Rome, and so no doubt all the Jews deemed it unsafe to remain in any parts of Italy. So they moved to Corinth. Aquila and Priscilla, they found their way to Corinth, they settled there, and they pursued their occupation as tent makers. Well, Paul comes along, and guess what? He's a tent maker too. He comes to Corinth, he meets them, he sees them. We don't know how, but no doubt he had probably heard of their faith. So Paul then lived and worked alongside of them, for now founding the church at Corinth. After a year and a half, stay with me here, Paul leaves and he goes to Ephesus. And when he does, he takes Aquila and Priscilla with him. The couple then stays in Ephesus, and Paul leaves and he establishes a church in their very house. Then this eloquent preacher, and I always think I so would have loved to have heard this guy. His name was Apollos. And no doubt everybody at the new, oh, Apollos, did you hear him? This is one of those great guys. He knows the Bible. He's very eloquent in speaking. He's he's a great guy, but he didn't know about the baptism of John. So Aquila and Priscilla take him by the side in private and explain it, the way of the truth more accurately to him. So he gets up and he continues to preach. And so all of this happens. And you think about now all of this, him being able to preach to all these people. And now he knows the way of the truth even more accurately because of this couple. But how did this couple know it? Well, guess who they lived and worked with? This guy named Paul. How did that all happen? Anybody in this audience want to say it was an accident? It was just by chance that these people met? God works in our lives through different people. People want to know, well, how does he work in my life today? Well, one thing I do know for sure, it's through other people. And that's both good and bad experiences that we have. We are to learn from all of those. We don't meet people by accident. When they come into your life, people play a role in your life. Know that paths cross for a reason. You need to treat people with significance. And that's treating people better. We don't meet people by accident. And then number six, never look down on someone unless you are helping them up. It's easy to look down on someone who maybe is not as successful or as accomplished. They're not as educated as I am. So it's easy to look down on somebody. Perhaps they have an older model iPhone. Really? Come on. I've got the latest one right here, right? It's easy to look down on them. Or they don't hang out with the coolest kids at school. So we look down on them. But here's what you do know, is that you have no idea how far that person has already climbed to get to where they are. Time could easily reverse the positions. Just read the book of Ecclesiastes if you don't think so. Don't make fun of people because that could be you. Things change, times changes. But the concept is don't ever look down on anybody. The very thing that Jesus condemned the Pharisees for is the same things that his disciples were guilty of. The exact same thing. And that was looking down on people. The Pharisees were good at it, but his disciples did it too. The disciples were scolding parents for bringing their little children to Jesus so that Jesus could touch them and bless them. The disciples apparently looked down on the children, feeling that the parents shouldn't bother Jesus with such ordinary children. Jesus gets upset with them. It was wrong for his disciples to have looked down upon these little children. So Jesus scolds them in Matthew 19:14. Jesus says, "Let the little children come to me and do not hinder them, for to such belongs the kingdom of heaven." Jesus very well could have said, "Hey guys, you are no better than these little children. My kingdom, in fact, is made up of people just like them. You want to be great in my kingdom? You be like one of these little kids. Let them come to me." And so I think my application to me is I need to recognize that all people, old or young, are God's creatures. Everyone is fearfully and wonderfully made. But people are at different stages in their journey of life, becoming what God wants them to be. And we need to remember that God is not done with them yet, and God is not done with me. He's still working on me. I've got greater steps to take. I've got greater things to do. So I may be down here on some ladder, bottom ladder of the rung, but that's here nor there to anybody else, and it shouldn't matter. Don't look down on anyone, young or old. Don't look down on anyone because of their gender, because of their race, because of their skin color. That's just silliness. No one is to be looked down upon. I want to read a passage from Song of Solomon. When was the last time you read from Song of Solomon? It's chapter 1 and verse 6. Quite simply, she's speaking. She says, "Don't look down on me, you fair city girls, just because my complexion is so dark. The sun has burned my skin. My brothers were angry with me and sent me out to tend the vineyards in the hot sun. Now see what it has done to me." She couldn't help it that her skin was a darker color. And she's saying, you girls, quit looking down on me. And here we are, 2022, and still goes on, doesn't it? People should not be ever looking down on anybody else. Paul said in Romans 12 and verse 16, he says, do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Truly, the only time to be looking down on people is when you are busy helping them up. And then lastly, y'all are listening so well, thank you, is number 7, treat everyone with kindness. Not because they are kind-hearted, but because you are. Kindness. This probably is the most meaningful one to me. The concept of kindness is just huge. It solves so many problems, makes life so much easier when we are just simply kind. And I think one of the greatest gifts that we can ever give to anybody is kindness. And it's one of those gifts that every single person can give. If someone is in need, then lend a helping hand. But don't just do it for the people that you like and that you respect. That's easy. Do it for the people who drive you crazy and you don't know. Be kind to everyone. True kindness lies in the act of giving without expecting anything in return. I think we understand that. But sometimes kindness becomes very difficult because at times it is not natural to be kind. When somebody is just flat out rude to you, what do you want to do? Right then in that situation, I want to be rude back to him. Come up here and hit me. No, don't. But my reaction is, I want to hit you back. Don't hit me. Right? It's hard sometimes to be kind. But we have the master teacher that set the example for us. And kindness moves mountains. It does, changes things so greatly. We need to remember that when we want to harbor anger and bitterness in our hearts, that's one of the two greatest tools that the devil has. He loves to see Christians angry. Instead, we need to be kind. Paul simply said in Ephesians 4 and verse 32, be kind to one another. Be kind to one another. 42 years ago, I attended Florida College. 2 years before that, I knew that I wanted to go to that school. It had a lot to offer, and I was certainly looking forward to it. But the main reason I wanted to go to that school is because I wanted to be a part of the Friends group, the music group there. I was a keyboard player and a singer. I did a lot of performing. Music was a large part of my life at that particular time, so I looked forward to that. Well, the time comes for tryouts, and there in one room are the Friends group at that time, and then the other room is us wannabes who are being tried out one by one. So we would sit there, and they'd call a name, and they'd go in the next room, and the band was already in there, and they would play with them or do whatever their thing is, and we'd sit and wait. Well, as it worked out, I was the last person in the room. I was sitting there by myself. I was the only last wannabe left. And so they opened the door, and they didn't have to call my name because nobody else was there. So I get up, and I go on in. And I go over to the Fender Rhodes keyboard, and I sit down. And they asked me if I knew this particular song. And my eyes went big, and I said, no, I don't know that song. And there was just a hush in the room. It's like, oh, no, he didn't know the song. What are we going to do? What seemed like a long time, I'm sure, was just a couple of seconds. But I said, well, what key is it in? And someone said A. And I said, okay, great, let's go. So they started to play the song, and I jumped in and started playing with them. And it was a neat song. It was a great song. It had a great beat to it. It was fun to play. And in the middle of the song, one of the public relations department head, Wayne Moody, gets up over, comes over to my keyboard. He turns it all the way up to number 10, and he says, take it. Okay? So I solo during the middle of the song and play, and we playing together, and then it had a really big ending to the song, and it was just fun. It was great. We finished. Everybody starts putting their instruments away and walking out, and I was told that in the morning, those who made the group, their names would be posted. Okay. As I was leaving, the guitar player, who was a sophomore from St. Louis, he patted me on the back as I was leaving, and he told me something. You see, my name wasn't on that list the next morning. I didn't make it, and I was crushed. But the words of encouragement that that young man gave me were so strong. I still remember them to this day, 42 years later. And he made me believe that I was not a failure. Just those simple words of encouragement encouraged me so much. That young man and I, we weren't friends. He was a sophomore. I was a freshman. We had different groups of friends. We didn't have any classes together. I mean, you'd say hi as you walk by, but we really didn't know each other. So his act of kindness wasn't because he was a good friend of mine. He didn't know me. But it was genuine. He showed kindness to me that had a never-ending impression on me. His name was Norman Harbor. Norman treated everybody with kindness. Not because everybody was kind, but because he was. And we live in a world that is filled with struggles and pains, and certainly anything but kindness at times. And kindness is that deep cleansing, refreshing breath that rejuvenates us. It refreshes us with goodness. It gives us the strength to persevere despite the troubles that we're going through. When somebody just simply says something kind. Kindness makes us happier, and when we're happier, it's easier to be kind. It's neat how that works. And when you're at peace with God and at peace with others, you're more likely to feel empathy for others, and we can just be kind. Kindness creates social bonding. It helps us with the healing process. I know that for true. Being unkind, though, however, it blocks our spiritual growth. When we're thinking about ourselves and we're not thinking about getting along, we're only thinking about me and my happiness, we're not doing what Jesus was telling his disciples to do. No matter how inconsequential an act of kindness might seem, it's good for you. Children, you need to get along with each other and be kind. And be kind to your parents. And you parents, be kind to your children. And more importantly, be kind to one another because your children are watching. Be kind to your bosses. Bosses, be kind to your employees. It's a simple word, but it's something that makes a great difference. And when we're showing kindness, are we not showing that we love each other? Are we not fulfilling Jesus' command? You will be known by how you love one another. Paul said in Ephesians, quite simply, be kind to one another. And by doing that, I think we will be treating people better. Treat people better. Thank you so much for listening tonight. It was such a great group of people here. I wish God's blessings upon you. And for those in the audience who want to be Christians, but you've not made that decision yet, but you know you want to. In fact, you probably know all the reasons you should do it. What is your reason for not becoming a Christian? That's my question tonight. Because God only wants the best for you. In fact, he's already done everything possible for you. It's up to you now. Become a Christian tonight if you haven't done that. Let Jesus and the rest of the world know that you love him, but mostly that you know he is the Son of God. and that you confess that and that you repent of your sins. And that's so important. And the same with the rest of us. If we have problems with anything I talked about tonight, we need to say, I'm going to stop doing that and turn that around. But turn our lives and give them to Christ. If that's what you need to do, why don't you do that now while we come together and sing this song?